And welcome to another episode of the Albion Raw here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online, radioreverb.com, on DAB, on Smart Speaker, and of course, on our podcast. I'm AD Packham, and we are finding new ways of shooting ourselves in the foot in association with Flowers Unlimited. Yes, that's right. With European qualification on the line, we somehow managed to mess it up after a double Dutch mix-up allowed Dominic Calvert-Lewin to score an injury time winner for Leeds. However, a trek to the continent is still on offer if we can negotiate a tricky last game of the season against Manchester United. And then on Tuesday night, the club held its annual award ceremony at the Amex, with Ferdi Kalioglu winning the Player of the Year and Kuru Mitoma retaining for the third time his Goal of the Season award. However, there was some terrible news for Kuru as he is set to miss the World Cup with a hamstring injury that he picked up against Wolves. Also on Tuesday night, the club released their 125th anniversary shirt, which has so far garnered some mixed reviews. Joining me today is, as ever, Alan Wares. And we are delighted to welcome Matt Letizia and Jason Dons. No, I mean, welcome Tom Hylands, who doesn't look anything like any of those guys.
Yeah, are what? You wearing your own teeth tonight, AD?
No, not really.
Didn't think so. You're all right, Tom?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm just disappointed that you don't think I look like any of those. But we'll
get. Would you want to look like Matt Letizia?
No.
I mean, you're not wearing a tinfoil hat for a start. So, I mean, you know, it's like...
Let's go for Joe Marler instead, then.
That's fine. He's a Brighton fan.
Exactly.
He is a Brighton fan.
Exactly.
And anyway, it's been an interesting week, Tom. So, I mean, it's just shooting ourselves in the foot. I mean, we're quite good at that over the years. It's just, it was Leeds had one shot on target and it was in the 96th minute.
Yeah, although they did also have Lewis Dunk trying to score for them as well, which Bart pulled off a great save for. So we'll give them that as well. But it's kind of the way Albion do it, right? We don't want to do things the easy way. We don't want to get to the final game and have it nice and easy and just a celebration. What's watching the Albion without a bit of anxiety going into a game?
you've been there too many times.
This is why beer sales are so good at the Amex.
Yeah, but I mean, do you think? Watching the game, it looked like there was too many below par performances. There was only maybe three or four of them that came out with any sort of real credit from it. And you know, were they nervous?
I fundamentally disagree with that question. Actually, yeah. Maybe. I thought that actually the second half especially was one of the best halves we've had. The fact that we didn't stick the ball in the net doesn't actually, you know, takes away
I
from
don't
that
know.
A bit.
I mean...
But no, I'm telling you that it was a totally dominant second half. I mean, it was a managed first half. It was, as a spectacle in the first half, it was dull, but it was managed. In the second half, it was one-way traffic and we did everything but score. And there was plenty of chances created. Leeds, incidentally, just defended very, very well. And there's low block and then there's base block. Because they were so low in their block, you know, any time that we had a shot on the 6-yard line, they had four players behind it. So, sorry, I've just cut you across you there, Tom. I think what was your take?
I think I was going to say similar. I think in particular in the second half, we did everything except put it in the net, which clearly is a fundamental part of
yeah,
the game, and it's something that we struggled at a fair few times over the last few years. You know, you look at some of the chances we created and 9 times out of 10, a top level player should be putting some of those away. I know there was a couple of cracking saves in that as well. But the opportunities were there. I think the team was set up well and actually did pretty well. It's just those key moments. One right at the end where just switch off, you're a couple of minutes from the end of the game. Just put the ball out. Let's not mess around with that. We know a point's going to be better than none. And then a couple of times in front of goal where really, you know, the likes of Gomez, his opportunity, he's just completely fluffed it. I think he can only score wonder goals.
I think he was going for a wonder goal.
I would definitely argue that one because, I mean, he scored twice against Leeds last season and Leeds were definitely not wonder goals.
They were wondering as much as someone got to the touchline, to the byline and pulled it back and we scored from it. That's the wonder of them.
I meant this season. Did I say last season? They weren't even in this league last season. But it was. I mean, I can get where you're coming from. But I mean, I'm just looking at a couple of players. Like, I mean, Minte's decision making was just absolutely appalling. He couldn't beat
his decision
man
making was the
once.
usual, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, and it's like Belabor reverted to the Belabor of early season. And you know the ball was just getting stuck under people's feet, and there just seemed to be a lack of cohesion at times. I mean, you're right, Al. There was some good football, and there were some good chances. I mean, Gracie Darlow, they were having their own individual competition there, and you know, and that goal line clearance from Ampadu. I mean, I've still got no idea how he got in front of a Welbeck
I thought it
shot,
was
but.
actually very, very good defending. I mean, in that sense, I mean, you, given that, and I'm gonna say this, having seen the interview after the game, Daniel Farke was actually decent enough. I suppose it can be benevolent that way because his team's just won. But you'd say we were lucky. I think he read the game the way the rest of us did. Yeah, Brighton absolutely battered us and did everything but the one thing they're supposed to do. We then break away with the last kick of the game after a silly mistake. He realizes that, he acknowledges that he's not going to turn around and do a Sean Dyche and say, well, we were the better team and we showed them how to play football. He's not going to do that. He's not that dishonest. So like I say, it's good that he can be honest enough that way. But yeah, I thought that what I actually felt was is that yes, there were some bad misses, but also there was some very good defending in front of the goal. It was last ditch defending, as you're saying about the Ampadu clearance. He saw what was coming and got himself in position appropriately. And that is actually something Lewis Dunk has done in his entire career. Ampadu's getting the plaudits for it, so he should, because he's helped his team keep a clean sheet. And as you told me several times, Adie, something that's so obvious, you keep a clean sheet, you're getting points.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's like, ultimately, a point wouldn't have been a terrible result for us, Tom.
No, a point would have probably been enough to see us go into this Sunday with a little less trepidation, really. And I think that's what's frustrating about it is it's not necessarily the result, it's the impact of the result. And I think that's what people get hung up on is the what could have been in terms of our end of season. Now, the fact is, it really doesn't change anything. It's still in our hands, and we have to go out and do one of the things that we've done quite consistently over the last few years and beat Man United. But
Yeah. Well, I mean,
it just thanks for that.
one of the things that we're looking at here is that the two teams that we're most looking at, Bournemouth and Brentford, their results over the weekend were that they drew. Yes, a draw. So a draw, therefore, wouldn't have been horrific because then it's as you were. The only thing is that Chelsea are actually now back up on our shoulder, and I'd be quite embarrassed if Chelsea finished above us in the table. Hey, at least we know that Palace can't beat us in the table, but that's another matter entirely. Yeah, it's not the most horrific. And even if we'd won, given the way that the rest of the games have gone, the 37th games have gone, we'd still need a win. So, yeah, it's as you were. I think the difference is that Bournemouth only need a point now to get that sixth place, whereas if we'd have won, they'd have had to have won. If we'd and so on, and there's so and even that, the most simplest of equations, is only probably about a 20th of all the number of arguments there can be as to who's going to finish where anyway. So
Oh,
there's
yeah.
not really worth looking at it because you could drive yourself around the twist doing so.
And to be honest, there's all these permutations around what competition we can end up. Frankly, from my point of view, any European competition would be amazing, and just be able to get the chance to go out and watch us in Europe against anyone.
Yeah.
So I don't buy into all of this kind of stress around which competition to land in.
Yeah. I'm totally with you there. I'm totally with you. But there is with the caveat that I suppose a lot does still depend on what happens with Aston Villa. But at the time of recording this, we're recording this on Wednesday. Villa are playing in the Europa League final tonight, so we don't know what the result is of that yet. By the time you listen to this, you probably will. So we'll know whether or not that sixth place could be a Champions League place. But I mean, as it stands at the moment, Villa are above Liverpool, and Liverpool can't beat an egg.
Yeah, and I think the other thing to always remember is the actual points that we're getting this season. I think, we're 9 points lower than we finished when we got Europa League before. So the actual number of points for Europe this year is a lot lower. And for most seasons, you wouldn't get Europe or be anywhere near it with it. I think that just shows how kind of compressed the middle of the Premier League is, in particular, and how everyone's just been completely inconsistent this season and beaten everyone, which has made it interesting, frustrating, and agonizing in equal parts. But
Especially when
the
you're in
bad
the middle of
things are
it.
there.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, yeah, and I mean, we're gonna not mention the team that won the league, but it's frustrating when you see that how that's actually happened. It's just.
Well, to be honest, I mean, I think if nothing else, it's because you know everyone can beat everyone. It's basically it's about consistency. Arsenal have been the most consistent side. You can have a debate as to whether they've been the best side, but seeing as football is judged on the number of goals you score, yes, you could talk about the quality of the play, how sexy that football was, the quality of the goals, blah blah blah. Seeing as it's as the top of the rules itself is a game played between two teams of 11 players, and the winner is determined by the number of goals scored, and it's
I
as
mean,
simple as that.
also, I think if you asked anyone back in February, would you take it if you were going into the last game of the season with the chance to qualify for the Europa League,
Or even the
or
Champions
technically
League.
the Champions League,
Yeah.
I think everyone would have turned around and gone, "You're absolutely dreaming. We're looking over our shoulder more."
You
I
then
think
have got.
the turnaround is quite incredible, for us. And it again, there's a bit of a frustration there. That run of 13 games with one win, you pick up another one win or two wins in that run, you're potentially top five and there.
But
But
I
that's
think there's about eight clubs that could say that as well, isn't
oh,
there?
100%.
But I mean, this season, I mean, last year when we were having this conversation around this time of the year, it was like there was the frustration that we'd left way too many points out on the pitch. You know, those two games where we're 2-0 up in the 86th minute and we end up not winning the games. We've only really had maybe one of those this year, which
But
is
don't
the
forget,
Everton one.
we've won games. I think
Yeah.
also, I think people were forgetting last season that we also either scraped a draw or got a win in the last minute. And I think we did it again this year. But you're quite right. I think the whole thing of, I think part, yeah, apart from Everton at home, I'm sure there's probably others, but none spring to mind. I think maybe
Well,
Fulham.
Leeds, obviously, but we weren't in
Fulham.
the lead in that game.
What about Fulham? That was the last minute, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, we're not. Are we talking about
Right,
VAR
should we
today?
talk about something happier then in that case? Like,
Okay, well, I mean, there was, like I said, there's a lot of chances. I mean, like Ferdinand like Gomez, and his finish was wild. It was his first touch. Chances kept on coming. Gomez misses. Veltman chances cleared off the line. But yeah, it was frustrating. But we move on. It was a big game now on Sunday, and it's in our hands.
what I would say is, and I know we'll talk about it a lot more later in the show, but having gone to the Players Award last night, it's what's evident is how much the players are up for Sunday. I think that they're smarting a little bit from that defeat. It's focus and minds. If we'd have won and the others had lost, you think, well, actually, that's half the job done. And of course, to be honest, the job is as much done in the 36th game as it is the 37th, and as much as it's not until the end of the 38th. So, but you can see how up for it they are. And I think that something like this, as I think it's something that Tom kind of alluded to, but the defeat has, it smarts, it hurts, and they really want to put it right. Their minds are totally
Well, yeah.
focused. If
I mean the
we don't do it on Sunday, it's not because they're not concentrating on it. It's because
No.
Man United have played a blinder.
But it's, I mean you can put some of it down to luck to a certain degree. I mean the obviously Leeds winning in the last minute, there was the performance at Newcastle, certainly didn't deserve to lose that game. It was actually really one of the best performances of the season, actually, despite losing.
Yeah.
And actually, we're going to talk about the winner of the goal of the season shortly. But I would argue that it might have possibly been in that game at Newcastle. But
That was in the top five anyway.
well, it should have been.
Well,
It should
yeah,
have been in the
and it
top one.
was. Well.
But I mean, obviously, we've got the Albion Roar. End of season awards coming up very, very shortly. Not in this show, in a couple of weeks' time. So we'll be compiling that. So anyone who's been on the show this season, will be giving us their 1, 2, 3 and of goals and of players, and we will bring you that in a couple of weeks' time. But I mean, who was your player of the season, Tom?
30. 30 was hands down mine.
I mean, therein lies the point, isn't it? I mean, a lot of people I speak to, I mean, there's a few that have gone for, and actually it's someone you've mentioned as well, just before we came on air, Ada, you said that someone voted for JP, which is, you know, there are, and until the last half dozen games, you know, you'd have said that was a fair shout. But just about everyone I've been speaking to, and of course, you know, I don't talk to everyone at the Albion, is that they've gone for Ferdy, and I don't think it's one of those sort of spectacular ones. I think Andy Naylor put it right. It was an open field. But I think he was, I mean, it sounds like I'm criticizing the guy. I'm not. He was the least inconsistent. Let's put it that way. No one has had an absolutely blinding season where they've absolutely ripped it up. And, you know, again, I was at the Players Awards, and Anthony Knockhart was there. And the season we got promotion, he was head and shoulders above everyone, not just at the club, you know, in the division. And that those kind of decisions are fairly easy. So this season, I think it's one of those that it's unfair to say the least worst, but because Ferdy had been decent, he's been very decent. But I think that the success we've had this season is almost exclusively down to the collective of the team rather than an individual pulling anyone up by the bootstraps.
Yeah, I think Ferdy's been very consistent. I think also coming back from injury, he's kind of stood out as a player for me this year because he's always given his all. He's up and down that wing, and like a well,
Like a
like
thingy
Fletcher,
that on a
really.
thingy.
The terms I
Yeah,
use is swashbuckling and marauding. That makes him
he's
sound
a
like
bit like.
Cowdy.
I was going to say that's a bit like Cowdy, just without the glass of sherry, but it's. I think he's been brilliant, and I think he's got better throughout the season as well. I think he's probably been our most reliable performer. I think he's got better defensively as the season's gone on as well. I think there was a question mark last season and early part of this season around his defensive capabilities, but he's really improved in that, and I think he just gives us a lot going forward. I mean, some of the balls that he's put in the last few weeks as well have just been absolutely brilliant. So it's given us that kind of threat up the top end of the pitch as well.
No, I totally
It
agree.
is surprising that he's only ended up with one goal this season, though. When, I mean, it must have hit the woodwork about 4 or 5 times this
Oh, he's
season.
had his own goal of the season competition that hasn't come off yet, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was effectively, I suppose you could call the you could wasn't it the case that he got an assist for Hinshelwood's goal at Brentford because he smacked it against the bar and Hinshelwood followed it up, or am I making that bit up?
1-2 off a crossbar, yeah.
Yeah, I mean it was perfectly placed against the crossbar. I mean, in terms of precision passing, it was perfect straight to Hinshelwood's feet.
That's what he was going for.
I reckon so. 100%, yeah. No, it's something again. Tom's just said that it's made me remember, and I think it was at the last knockings at the end of last season. I think he was playing then, but certainly big this season is that one thing that came across is that he could actually ping in a decent cross, and he hasn't done it to the same extent this year. In fact, like I say, he's played a lot more defensively than because there was a couple of times when he first came, he started further up and was playing as a winger. I mean, the other thing I remember about it was he was paraded in a white suit at the Crawley game. That was a bit weird. I'm just looking back on it now because this, like I say, that
And from Del
swashbuckling,
Monte.
it was a bit like that. I mean, eventually you get to see that actually, yeah, there was a touch of class about him. But that first season, as he calls it, I had my stupid toe injury. Which, yeah, I mean, that's the phrase he used last night. So, yeah. I personally think that it's not the fact that, well, us three all voted for him and we felt that, and there's a lot of people that we go to the football we felt that. I genuinely feel it's the a good choice, and his name goes down in the annals of sporting history at the Albion, and still it's now 20 years since the leading scorer won Player of the Season.
Well, that I was going to come to that actually, Tom, because I mean, obviously, Birdie's
picked up the men's award as voted for by the fans, which is massive. But I think the one that the players want the most in these sort of things, obviously individual awards in the team sport is a nonsense anyway. But the one the players want is the player's player. That it's the one that's voted for by their peers, and that went to Danny Welbeck.
Who would have been my second choice for player of the season? I think Welbeck is—he's a bit of an enigma, isn't he? He seems to have got better with age. He seems to be fitter now than when we signed him. I think I saw he's played 36 games this season, which, I mean, back when we signed him, 6 years ago, that would have been crazy talk for Welbeck to be managing that many appearances. And I think if you look at kind of the environment where we haven't really had strikers on our books this season, we've either sent them on loan or decided that they're not going to make the match day squad. So he's had to carry
that. Or get crocked.
But Welbeck's had to effectively carry all the striking responsibility on his shoulders, which for a player that historically has been very injury prone is even more remarkable with that pressure. But I think he scored some brilliant goals, and that's an aspect of the game that he's not really renowned for. He's much more around what he does in bringing other players in and creating opportunities and that. So it's nice to see that element kind of get there. And I think, you know, he's getting better and better.
Now, when you're talking about 36 games this season, I mean, it's not a criticism, I say, and how many of those were 90-minute appearances? Some were where it was necessary because others might have been crocked or he was doing really well or whatever it might have been. But it's actually something that, you know, you're saying there 6 years ago, and I think it was something that happened recently. It might have been the Leeds game or the one before that. I lose track. But when he first signed, there was absolutely no way I'd have said that he'd have played 200 games for Brighton, which by far is the most for any club that he's played for.
Yeah, the most appearances, the most goals, you know, that's pretty remarkable, especially when the kind of feeling amongst everyone when he signed was he was a washed up has-been that's just been relegated with Watford. and why on earth are we signing him? I think we've managed to just get the best out of him, and I think sometimes players just suit a club really well. The environment's right for them, the coaching's right for them, and
doctors,
I think
are right.
That's what we've found.
Well, and more than that, he's in with it. Well, we don't know, but there's always that sniff of a possibility of him going to the World Cup.
I believe that there's going to be an extended squad announced I can't remember how many people.
It's supposed to be the 55. I thought that the 55, the deadline for the kind of the trim down is actually approaching, because certainly some countries have confirmed their final squad. I guess that probably in this case, Tuchel will wait until the end of this season.
I
mean, the mere fact of, like, again, 6 years ago, right, well, Danny Welbeck's going to be playing in the 2026 World Cup. Yeah, right. Okay, mate. You know, what is it? What, the wheelchair football or, you know, walking football? No. I mean, and this is the point. I think it's probably more and more games every season. I mean, it's a testimony to, one, his fitness, two, his durability, and three, probably the medical team here. He's, like I say, I think the idea of him doing 38, 90-minute matches these days is... I don't think it's ever happened in his career anyway, so...
And I think the thing is with Danny, with the possibility of going to a word that you like, Tom, a jamboree.
There's something beginning with J.
Is the fact that he'd be a good tourist, because he knows he's not going to play many minutes, if any at all. But he's good around the place, and actually will help other people and integrate people. He's been to World Cups and European Championships before. It's not an alien concept to him, and he'll just be thrilled to be in and around it.
Yeah, and it gives Jason Steele a partner for the golf course, so everyone's a winner.
he plays darts now, Tom.
Yeah.
I mean, like I say, it's just all the way down to, like I say, 6 years ago. One, 200 games for Brighton. Two, with a view to go into the World Cup. And three, like I say, the original point here is that he was voted the peer by his peers as their player of the season. And I guess it's kind of interesting also, therefore, that when you notice what fans see and what players see are obviously two different things. What goes on in Lancing obviously stays in Lancing, but what they see versus what we see. And like I say, if the players can see that what he's doing, not just the training, but the buzz, the happiness, the mentoring he does as one of Dad's army, versus like I say, what happens when we see them on the pitch. You realise there's a sort of fair consistency about him and his approach to playing for the Albion. And like I say, we've got at least one more year out of him.
And
Yes,
the other thing is just that, these awards, I know, Al, you kind of said, Ferdy's kind of just been consistent and no one really stood out, but these are players that are going to deliver either our best or our second best ever finish in 125 years. So actually, the level of performance is really high across the board, and I don't think that should be kind of missed from it.
Well, in that case, with that in mind, I mean, considering, here we are nervous, and I think possibly maybe with the excitement of that we've had for when it happened for the first time, and I say in this instance, I'm talking about getting into Europe for the first time, the excitement was off the scale. You could almost, you could bottle it and sell it. This time around, I wouldn't say necessarily the excitement is quite so high. So my point to you, well, question to you, Tom, is, are we as fans managing our expectations properly?
Easy answer is no, but I think the slightly more nuanced answer is I think the first time of Europe is always going to be special, and the way that we did it in that kind of, to use your phrase, Eddie, that swashbuckling derby ball and kind of blowing everyone out of the water as we went by. This time it's a different feel, and I think there's a level of anxiety because I think we all really want to do it again because we've had that experience. We didn't think it would, well, we didn't necessarily think it would come around again so soon or have that opportunity to. So you've almost got that anxiety of losing it when it's in your grasp, which I think is a really different approach to what it was, what, 3 seasons ago, 2 seasons ago, whenever it was that we qualified. So I think there's that element. I think also just the way that the world is at the moment, it's all ups and downs and everyone's going to the extremes of both. So when we're losing, everyone's pulling their hair out if they've got hair to pull out.
Thanks.
No
Good
offense
save,
there,
Tom.
Eddie. But also when we're winning, everyone's kind of on cloud nine, and I think actually a little bit of realism might not harm people.
Nothing else. It doesn't hurt to remember once in a while that these players are actually human.
And also, it doesn't hurt to remember that these players are young. And I do say that with the degree of incredulity that
Close
greeted the
enough.
fact that Diego Gomez won the Young Player of the season award when everyone thought he was about 48.
Well, not quite. No,
20,
not
well,
with those.
he's only just turned 23. I was flabbergasted.
Your gasp was flabbergasted, was it? Okay. Okay, with that in mind, then, Tom, considering, like I say, I think unless you're Welbeck, Gross, Dunk, Steele, etc., I think you've got to assume that everyone's under 23. And the only one that sort of falls outside, the only ones that fall outside that are Van Hecker and Mitoma. Yes, I know there's probably more. And it's the coaches that have chosen the young player, so there's reasoning behind that. So, what's your take on Gomez getting that gong? And would there have been a better consideration for that, do you think?
To be honest, there's a lot of choices you kind of say. I think he's worthy of it. I think he's really stepped up this season. He's kind of improved a lot. He's become pretty much a mainstay in the team, and those 4 goals up at Barnsley were something to behold, right?
Well, we'll be talking about that very, very shortly. But just
Actually,
before
sorry,
we
can I
move
just
on.
sorry, can I just say, Eddie, and don't forget what happened at Spurs, and we thought that was it, not just him for the season, him for the World Cup. So, I mean, thankfully, it was nothing like as bad. I mean, obviously, I can only assume that that finish that he tried to put in at Leeds was actually him worrying about his injury because it was terrible.
Maybe. But before we move on, also congratulations should go to Fran Kirby and to Kike Seke, who won the women's Player of the Season and the Women's Players Player of the Season. So good, well done to them. Okay, you're listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. This show is brought to you, Al, in association with Flowers Unlimited.
Well done. Moving on. So, you want Dave Costa, thank you so much for sponsoring the Albion Roar. Go and visit their shop at 175 to 177 Portland Road, Hope. I love the fact that I know this off by heart. I'm not doing this on a script or anything like that. To the point that a few months ago, when we had the Americans on, they were actually repeating it with me. So I've got to come up with a new script, I think. 175 to 177 Portland Road, Hove. For your flowers, for your I'm surprised, actually, they didn't sort of have more flowers at the Players Award, actually. I mean, it would have been nice to have had it floralised a bit, but then we were outside and it did look as though it was going to chuck hard.
Hay fever.
Say again?
It was hay fever.
Or hay fever as well. Okay, fine, fair enough. In which case, they should have adorned the place with more champagne and chocolates. But yes, you can get all these kind of things for your loved ones. If you go to flowersunlimitedbrighton.co.uk, you can get your goodies from there as well. Or if you go in person and tell them you're an Albion season ticket holder, you are entitled to a 20% discount from their shops, their bills. So yeah, head to Portland Road in Hove, and thanks very much indeed to Dave Costa of Flowers Unlimited for supporting and sponsoring the Albion Roar.
Okay, well, Tom, Kerim Mitoma has won the Goal of the Season award for the third time in a row. Did he win it for you?
Yeah, it was a good strike, wasn't it? Let's be fair. Just the skill involved in that is pretty ridiculous.
Frankly made it look easy, didn't he?
Yeah, and I think it's on his wrong foot as well, isn't it? So even more. But you know, it's just a Kerim Mitoma award now, isn't it? I think.
Well, he's up to retain it on the with Match of the Day as well, for because he's won Goal of the Season for whatever month that game was, come last month. So basically he'll be in the final shake up for the Goal of the Season there as well, which of course he won last season as well. So
remind me, okay, if it's 3 years in a row, obviously the one last year was the Chelsea one. What was the one before? Remind me. Was it the Wolves one where he ran through the entire defence?
Yes, it was, yeah.
Right, got you. Okay. Yeah, well, what I love about that is that each goal was absolutely brilliant. I'm going to talk about those three goals of the season. Each of those was brilliant in their own way. First one runs through everyone, and there's two Wolves players are trying to chop his legs off. One was where he just brought the ball out of thin air, got past the defender who was Bambi on ice and stuck it in the corner. I suppose actually you could say the Spurs one. Again, he took it out of thin air. But, you know, and actually he didn't smash it home, because I was with you at the time, wasn't I, Adam? At the time,
we thought
he smashed it. But he didn't. He side-footed it quite firmly, but side-footed it beautifully. And actually, I think if you're going to have nearly Goal of the Season, he could have nearly got the Goal of the Season in that game up at Everton, where he teed himself up and smashed it against the bar.
Yeah, and he could also have nearly got it in the next game against Chelsea, when he did it almost identical. But yeah. I mean, while we're talking about Kerim, Tom, I mean, we've been talking about Danny Welbeck possibly going to the World Cup. Unfortunately, Kerim won't be. That injury he picked up against Wolves ruled him out. I mean, I'm absolutely devastated for him, because, you know, I mean we've mentioned it on this show before, that goal he scored for Japan against England a few weeks ago, I celebrated it as if he'd just scored for Brighton. I didn't care the fact it was against England. I just loved watching Japan play, and that they're still going to be exciting to watch. But you know, the pace, the speed at which they play is such a delight. But to miss what is arguably their talisman is a big miss for them as well.
Oh, for sure, and you know, it's a big miss for us for the last few games of the season. And you know, it's one of those things. The last couple of seasons, he's picked up injuries that have put him out for a while, and just hope that it doesn't end up becoming kind of a thing for him where he's going to have these longer periods off, because it seems to have taken him a while to kind of get back to his best this season. There was a lot of ups and downs with him. And yeah, it's gutting to kind of see the way that it happened as well, just kind of pulling up and having to go off. It's never going to be good when that happens. It's those innocuous ones that always seem to cause the issues.
Do we know if it's a repeat of the previous injury?
Well, it's a hamstring injury, so I mean
What was it last time
he
then?
had that back injury where he got
Of
assaulted at
course,
Sheffield
yeah.
United, wasn't it? Which kind of like that took a lot out of him. It's taken him a long time to recover from that. I think he came back too soon, and he's been dipping in and out ever since.
This is what worries me because he came back, and I actually thought he came back a lot better, probably, not far off the best that we've seen him. And we got probably a third of a season out of him where he came on, or he'll come on when we start, and he was absolutely brilliant. And this is what worries me. I mean, I don't know his mindset, but it's, he's had that long injury layoff. He's got another, he's had half a third of a half a season, something like that here. And then he goes down. I mean, if it's down to a heavy challenge, that's one thing, but this is something that's pulled up. And therefore, I can't help feeling, and I hope it isn't the case, that it'll affect their confidence because he thinks next time, once he's ready to go again, what's the next breakdown he's going to have? Is he going to have to play within himself in order to keep his longevity going? That's what worries me about him. I hope it's okay.
He's always had that extreme acceleration, hasn't he? And that's something which I think we have seen him not exploit that as much as he possibly would have liked to. You could see that it's possibly playing on his mind, because the amount of times you used to see him just like ghost past players as if they're not there. This season, he's and since he's come back, we started to see a little bit more of that, but
Well, that's what I
throughout.
mean. I think that's what I mean about when I was saying about, I think is we're getting close. We were getting close to sort of the best that we've seen of him. And I mean, I think was it the Liverpool game he came on and actually just ghosted through their defence. I won't say like it wasn't there, but it wasn't there because he left half their defence on their backside. And we know that's what he can do. I mean, I think it's just one of those things where we're back to the question I asked Tom earlier about managing expectations, that every time Carew gets the ball, he's going to be able to beat three players before planting it where the spiders live. And that's obviously totally unfair to expect that.
No, I expect it.
Oh, okay, fair enough. In that case, I'll manage my expectations in another way. Sorry.
Yeah, but I mean, let's say, well, I mean, if he's injured, it might take him a time to come back, which could be, I mean, a player like that's always going to be in demand, but he's not getting any younger, and if we can get as much out of Carew as we possibly can for as long as we can, that's a good thing for me. And even a half fit Carew is probably better than half the wingers in the world. So,
And I'm
but.
going to say this, and as someone obviously who's watched the Albion and for a long time, and we've had some great wingers in our history. I mean, your favourite player you talk about, Adia, Steve Penny, and obviously the Vicente was just a major coup at the time. I've got to say that for my money, Carew is probably not just one of the best wingers. Well, probably, sorry, let's start again. He's not just the best winger the Albion has ever had. I'm going to say he's one of the best wingers the world has ever seen. It's just that I'm going to say it's unfortunate he's Japanese. What I mean is he doesn't get to play for Brazil or Germany or Italy or whatever it is. He does play, as you say, Adi, for an exciting nation, but it's a nation that hasn't really achieved a great deal on the world stage, which doesn't, I mean, it's a bit like, I suppose, the George Best syndrome, isn't it? He never got to play in the World Cup because he's, for him, the unfortunate happenstance of being born in Northern Ireland. But when you're talking about seeing a player in the league, I'm struggling. I mean, we're talking about the likes of John Barnes and Chris Waddle, and obviously football's changed and things like that. But there are very few defenders that can actually, best Karu
It's
Mitoma.
ironic you use him. I mean, he certainly wouldn't be the first Irishman to play for England, would he?
No, I mean Tom. I mean, I've just waxed lyrical on him, and I think it's just one for me. It's just one of those things that, cherish the time that we are watching him. Is this something you go with, or do you am I talking out my wrong end?
Well, I think it's interesting because I think he's going into the last year of his contract, right? There was all the talk last summer about signing a new contract, but he didn't. Now, is he going to sign an extension with us, given that he's got injuries, given that he's what, 29 now, is
I think
he?
he is, yeah.
Does he sign a contract or that? And if he doesn't, do the club look at it as, well, we'll have another year and let you go for free, or will they want to cash in? So that's one of the kind of question marks over the summer as well, for me. If we've seen him play for the Albion, then that's great. He's one of the best players ever watched, for us, and one of the most exciting. I hope that he kind of stays loyal and wants to stay, especially if we're in Europe again and get the chance to go and play. And I think that's probably on a number of players' minds of if we qualify for European competition, that makes the appeal of staying here that much greater.
But this is the thing. This is what I was trying to say earlier. The fact that, I mean, although it's absolutely devastating for him and for his country that he's not going to the World Cup, he's not in the shop window, which he could have been if.
Yeah, but being in the Premier League means he's in the shop window anyway, so
Yeah,
I
but I
don't
mean,
think
when
that's
you.
necessary. I think, if anything, I think you probably got more fervour in watching the Premier League. Yeah, you have the national pride thing. But I'm also going to say this, is that because of obviously the build-up and all the gripiness and the sort of, like, and let's not get political here, but let's face it, America is not the everyone's best friend at the moment. But Tom, are you going to get into the World Cup, or are you going to be like probably me and AD that aren't really going to watch the games that the Albion players are in?
To be honest, I never get into international football at all. I pretty much can't be bothered with it. I'll watch a few games if I'm around, but it's not going to be going out of my way to watch it at some horrific time in the morning.
Well, I'll tell you what you could do. I mean, in obviously we're going through this massive cost of living crisis at the moment, where a pint of milk is really expensive, beer's expensive. What would be a really good idea to do during that particular time, Tom? What do you think?
I think it's important to support local businesses and local breweries in particular. You can't go wrong with that.
But I mean, how about, I've got a really good idea. How about bringing out a shirt that costs £150? Well,
Hang on, the cost of living, when the cost of living crisis is paying for bills that you're obliged to pay for, you don't have to buy one of these things. It's not a tax that we're being lumbered with. It's a
Shirt
nice
tax.
present. So I don't think you can really add a cost of living to this.
It'd still be way too much money, but for 125th anniversary, why not make it £125? It's just like ridiculous.
Well, that's Nike for you, isn't it?
I mean, 30 quid is more than enough for a football shirt, personally. But it's like,
Well, that
and
seems to
particularly
presume
this
that you.
particular new one looks like it's come off the shelves in Primark. I know it's the right color. I know it's
Well, I
historically
think
the
the
right
whole
color.
notion of its design, I think, is if for those who are criticizing the design, I think they're missing the point by 125 years, frankly. You might not like the polo look to it. You might not, okay, the color. You might not, the fact you can't see the club badge. You can't see what. That's not the point of the shirt. The point is, it's supposed to be an affectation, a representation of the first shirts, or the first kit that the Albion wore upon their Genesis back in 1901. When you see the kit in its entirety, in other words, the pale blue shirt, the white shorts, and the dark socks, it actually looks really, really nice. Now, if you're talking about the shirt as a casual thing, then yeah, I can see the point. It's not that great. So it's a one-off thing. I think as a representation of the first ever game that the Albion played sometime September 1901, I think it's an absolutely brilliant reconstruction. Yes, we have to have a modern take on it, and I'm sure there's going to be the Premier League badge on the arms and all the rest of it, where previously it was probably just a blue vest that someone was throwing out anyway.
Yeah,
So
it wouldn't
any
have
and
even been captain's armbands back then.
then you wouldn't have, yeah, and certainly not numbers and names and things like that. So I think as an affectation, I think it's absolutely brilliant. The fact is, as a design, a style thing, and a look thing, yeah. I mean, I probably wouldn't buy it. Even if I could afford it, I probably wouldn't buy it. It's just not my thing. But for the club to celebrate they're called, is it the quasi-qui centennial? Have you seen the kit modelled in its entirety, Tom? Have you got a take on this?
Yeah, to be honest, I don't mind it. I think, as that representation of the first kit, I think it's quite nice. It's something different as well. I think I am glad that we changed the blue in our history and went to stripes. I think that's a fair fair call. But I'll be more interested in seeing what they do with our main playing shirts this year, because that's a much better take of how we can celebrate 125 years in a more prominent way, and at a slightly more reasonable price of, what, £80?
Yeah, it's not reasonable. I mean, in terms of the sponsor being in the same kind of, you know, Arsenal do that all the time when they're doing their no more red campaign. So
we're slightly different, but I take the point. I mean, like I say, it's a bizarre way of doing it, but it's either that or you take. I don't know if there's an obligation for American Express to have their name on the shirt. If there's an obligation for the Albion to wear the badge, and I guess there are rules about this thing. And if they, you know, like I say, I think your point about the Arsenal thing sets the precedent that yes, their badge is still on there. Their cannon is still on there, but it's white on white, or in our case, blue on blue. But I say it's just also that the shirt itself is what it is, but when you see the kit in its entirety, you can see the history, you can see what they're trying to achieve. And I think having seen the lads modelling it last night, I think it was I really really liked it as a kit.
But you like the purple monstrosity as well, so you know.
No, I said I don't
purple
mind.
Purple one's nice.
Yeah, I don't mind it. Well. It's just people. I've noticed another thing historically that people judge the quality of a kit based on the success we've had on it. I mean, I always think back to the 2010-2011 season, the last season at Withdean. I hated that kit, but people love it, and I think it's principally on the back of the fact that we absolutely destroyed the third division in that kit, and so therefore people think of it much more fondly. As an Albion kit, blue with sort of thin white stripes, I hated it. But and also I do prefer, and I know go against the grain, but I do prefer the tradition of white shorts. So you know,
Well, you know, we played in the FA Cup final with a blue shirt with thin white stripes on it.
Yeah,
and we did in the Premier League a few years ago.
And I didn't like. Yeah, I think probably one of the worst ones is that really really narrow pinstripe one with Santex on it. That was horrific as well.
That's not so good. We all know that the worst one ever was like the one with the Andy Pandy shorts, which would just look just.
Well, actually,
the shirt
wasn't too bad. It's the shorts that made the whole kit, you know, an embarrassment, because the shirt itself was perfectly all right.
Okay. My one kit wish, though, whilst we're on kit, is to go back to a red and black away shirt. We've not had one for years. And I'd love to see us in red and black again for a ways.
That's a good shout. I like that, actually. Yeah.
Well, we will see what happens. Okay, one team that we won't be playing next year unless the appeal is seen out is Southampton. Now, there's a lot of browbeating about this, Tom. I mean, I can see you're raising your quizzical eyebrow. What's your opinion on the sporting sanctions?
I mean, they cheated. They admitted to cheating. They admitted to cheating three times over the season. And, you know, reap what you sow. So it's, I think the team that kind of has a legitimate claim to be really annoyed at all of this is Hull. I mean, Hull are expected to play on Saturday, is it? And they still don't know who they're playing in terms of confirmation.
I think there's a bit more to it than that. I mean, going to football matches these days is very, very expensive, right? So basically, you've got, even though Southampton isn't very far, you're going to have people who've had to pay for train tickets, for hotels. Take time off work.
On fans, it's awful all around. But from a sporting kind of situation, the EFL have created this situation that is really putting Hull at a disadvantage, because they're having to prepare for two different teams and two different styles of play, whereas both Middlesbrough and Southampton know that they're going to be playing Hull if they're in that final.
Well, actually, you say that. I don't think it's particularly fair on well, I say it's not fair on Borough. I think it's a bit sort of... Yeah, you know, Borough are not going to have, because they've thinking, you know, in as far as they were concerned, they were out. They can go off on their holidays.
No, they carried on training.
No, they stayed in
training
straight away. Yeah, so they straight away called it that it could be a potential. So they kept all their players back and training to prepare for the match,
because this came out before the second leg, didn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, the accusation was made that, and I love the fact that I've seen the footage of where it was, and it was kind of in a, I think it was in a private sort of sports area, but it's not shielded off the way that, say, for instance, Lansing is. I mean, if you want to spy on the Albion, you've got to kind of either, I mean, there's no tower blocks that overlook the training ground. You could probably look over the fence, provided you're prepared to risk electrocution of falling onto the railway line. So yeah, the Albion have got this thing of being effectively behind closed doors, but this was out on an open field. But the ridiculous thing is that it was 150 yards away. And what on earth can you glean from that, apart from maybe realizing one player is not as running as well as they could, but certainly in terms of tactics, you can't glean anything from it.
Well,
And in
the
this
fact
day
is
and age.
that they've admitted to three counts of this, and they didn't win any of the game.
Really?
Yeah, that is hilarious. But I also don't get it, like why you're doing it in this day and age where you've got all the statistics, all the data, all the analysis you could ever want from actual games. And really, our team's changing the way they play completely week to week. Yes, they're going to do things to target you, but it just is bonkers to me. And I think, if I was a Southampton fan, I'd be asking massive, massive questions about the club because the club has just let them down massively.
It's quite
And
embarrassing, isn't it?
yeah. And to your point, AD, the financial implications that these fans have had in terms of booking travel, booking accommodation, booking their tickets, which they'll get refunded for the tickets, but it's absolutely crazy. And then you've also got the prospect that the game gets moved, and then that impacts the travel and cost for three sets of fans. It's just an absolute mess.
It is. And also, it also raises the specter of the fact it's yet another trip to the northeast next
Oh,
season.
I mean, the choice of Hull or Middlesbrough. What a prospect.
Well, at least
What a prospect.
I've got the lucky, as much as my in-laws actually live just outside Grimsby, so I've got a stop-off point on the way to
So you've
Hull.
got three great options.
Yeah. I've got some friends who live in Saltburn, it's like that's a nice place.
Yeah, fine, but yeah, at least we've got the stage off point. But I mean, yeah, it's. I mean, let's put it this way: put ourselves in that position. If the Albion had caught doing that, I would have. I think the Albion roar would have had to have detonated or.
There would have been a bleep button,
Oh,
and
God,
it would
yeah.
have just been a perma because we would have been absolutely. It's just horrific. I mean, I was actually one of my daughter's friends' dad is a Southampton fan, and he had tickets to go this weekend. I spoke to him this morning, and he's absolutely fuming.
Hang on, is he fuming at? Is he fuming at the Football League? Or is he fuming at his own club?
Both, I think. I mean, there's a theory that they're being too heavy-handed. But basically, I mean, this isn't the first time this has happened, right? So basically, when Leeds got caught doing it, and Bielsa did it, he got fined £200,000 for it, and he actually paid that out of his own pocket, actually. But after that, then the authorities put some restrictions in place that. This is now seen as cheating. If you do it, there will be sporting
Well, this is
sanction.
it. There's precedence, isn't there?
Yeah, and
Leeds, go on, sorry.
the other thing that I think is slightly ridiculous is Southampton saying it's cost them 200 million. I mean, that's massive whataboutery, and they would still have to go and win the game
Yeah.
in order to get the financial bit. Yes, it's lost them the chance of
Yeah.
playing for that massive financial prize, but it's not a guarantee.
Yeah, no.
So
And they've
that's
been good this
an
season. They didn't
irrelevant
need to
element.
cheat.
No.
I mean, since the new manager, who is probably responsible for Cheatgate, it's they've actually they had that thing that they beat Arsenal in the FA Cup. They had a terrible start to the season, and they managed to turn it around and actually had a massive surge towards the end of the season to get themselves into this position, and they could have had automatic promotion possibly. It went to the last game of the season, but they didn't need to do it.
Yeah,
Well,
well, if they didn't cheat against Oxford and they picked up that win, maybe they would have got the
yeah.
automatic.
Well, this is it. I mean, it's baffling. Thankfully, we didn't do it. I'll tell you what we haven't mentioned yet, AD. I want to go back to it a little bit. Is We were talking about goals of the season. Sorry to sort of take us back 10 minutes here, but obviously we talked about Carew's one as the worthy winner, and I think Kostoulis's one, the overhead was second, and Gomez's thunder, what's it, against Barnsley. And when people say which one against Barnsley, which one do you think we mean? Yeah, two
All of
goals
them.
were great. Which one do you think was, so that was third. And I think your favourite up at Newcastle, Wade, was in there as well. But I do have to mention the women's goal of the season, and it wasn't necessarily the
Nor
best. It's the
them.
one that got us all screaming. And I rarely leap off the settee when I'm watching a game on my own at home. And I leapt off the settee screaming when Nordam's winner went in against Liverpool. I mean, it was a decent finish, but wow, that was exciting. And I think it's, I suppose, does the goal of this, if that begs the point, does the goal of the season have to be the biggest, the best screamer, the most successful, the most,
Yes.
outrageous? Or, for instance, you could argue that the goal of the season in 1997 was Robbie Ryanout's tap-in.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that is a
Depends on
thing
what
which
you
we will have
judge it
another
on.
day. But I mean, I'm saying that the goal of the season should be aesthetically pleasing, and that's why on the Albion Raw Award show, Al, we have a moment of the season, and that
Oh,
was
there's
very
all
much
sorts of
a
things that we're going
moment.
to ask everyone about. So if you were on the show this season, we're coming back at you. So you have been warned.
You've been warned, Tom. You've been warned.
So yeah, no, I just want to just do a quick report from last night. There was a lot of people there. Smudge turned up, Gordon Smith turned up, Brian Horton was there. They're looking in fine form. John Templin was there. Dave Hollins, the 150-year-old goalkeeper, he came along and they asked him about, stuff about him.
He said, "What color was the first shirt?" And he said, "Oh, I was there 125 years ago."
Was his, I actually saw Dick Knight there. We incidentally do have two honorary life presidents at the club now because Ray Bloom was made honorary life president alongside Dick Knight. And obviously sort of like the various awards of the fan of the year and the inspiration of the year, and those stories are the ones that actually do go under the radar. And I know that obviously every club will have fans like that and moments like that and inspirations like that, and you have these things. I mean, the fan of the year. There's actually a bloke who lives in Dundee, of all things. I think he's the Scottish Seagulls, which is total membership of him. And, his story was great.
I thought it
So
was the out BHA Alba, wasn't it?
there was, well, I don't know. Anyway, my
I
point
know a
here
few
is
people that come down from Scotland to
okay,
the
so there's
Scottish
more than one,
Seagulls.
but in this case, he's got a flag that says Scottish Seagulls, and he didn't seem to have any mates with him. So it was just a random Scots person who randomly wanted to choose Brighton once upon a time. About 40 odd years ago. But these are the stories that actually make up part of what this brilliant club is. And they had Steve Sidwell gave his, sort of 5-part history lesson of the club, which I mean, the vast majority of which we already know. And in that sense, I'm really looking forward to the museum opening in August. And it's just kind of the rundown of, 125 years of the Albion and what a brilliant club this is. So I've got to ask this because we're running out of time very quickly, Tom, in about 30 seconds. What does Brighton and Hove Albion mean to you?
Oh, that's put me on the spot there. I
Okay.
think it's about the community of it and the connections. Like, I've got a great group of friends that I only know because of football, and it's a way to bring people together. And I think if you look at kind of moments throughout the history, it's kind of been that central factor across Sussex. And I think we're really lucky as a club that we are effectively a county club, and actually it brings in a whole area. Whereas you go into London and it's all small parts. So I think we're really fortunate that, it does reach into that. Whether, there's arguments whether we're moving away from that community feel, but I still think that it's at the heart of what it is. And I think, supporting a club like Brighton, there's not many other clubs in England that can give you the feelings that Brighton has, from potentially going out of business to winning however many league titles with Dean, the promotions, the relegations, playing across all of the leagues. I think
And the
if someone
continent.
supports and the continent, and I think someone that supports one of the traditional big six teams misses out on that, and misses out on a lot of that camaraderie and feeling that you can get from a club like ours, because of everything that we've been through. And I feel sad for them.
Not too much, though, I hope.
No, I won't feel sad for Spurs if it does go that way.
Yeah.
They will get some of that experience, but yeah.
Well, just remember, Tom, we're Brighton Hove Albion. We're practically French. And on that note, that's all we got time for. So thank you to Tom Hyland. Thank you to Alan Wares. I've been AD Packham. This has been the Albion Roar on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. And in association with Flowers Unlimited, we'll see you all again next week.
There were times in the days gone by when I thought I was living, having fun with all the friends I knew. Now it seems all so long ago, for my life changed completely from the moment I met you. Come what may, what the past was like. I will live for tomorrow. Yesterday is very far away. Now you're here. Everything is new. You are all that I long for, and I long for you to stay. Come what may, I will love you forever, and forever my heart belongs to you. Come what may, for as long as I'm living, I'll be living only for you. Now I know I was lost till I met you. When I met you, love told me what to do.